So, welcome to ASI Cast number 130. I'm Richard Marks, ASI's Research Director, and I'm joined today by Greg Morris. Greg is Senior Research Manager at Formula One, having joined the company in May 2017, with a remit to deepen Formula One's understanding of their fan base and how they engage with their sport. So, welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Thanks very much, Richard. Pleasure to be here.
Now, we're just a couple of weeks away from our annual conference. You can register via the link in the show notes with the podcast if you haven't already. And on Tuesday, the 2nd of November, Greg will be talking about the impact of the Netflix Formula One series Drive to Survive. So we thought it'd be good to have a chat with Greg about all things research, which is obviously something we love to do. Now, what seems to have been noticeable about the many changes and improvements that Liberty has made to Formula One since they acquired the sport in 2017 is the degree to which they've been informed by research. Greg, what did the research reveal about the relationship Formula One had with its fan base when you took over, and what challenges were identified in the way that the sport was perceived generally?
Well, I mean, I think essentially when I arrived at Formula One in 2017, as you said, it was just after Liberty took over the sport, there essentially wasn't any real research happening. And so I guess in terms of hard information about the relationship with the fan base, we had very little hard information. We had to go on a lot of kind of anecdotal evidence. One of the first things we did, though, was we commissioned our own study, which ran in sort of several markets. It was mainly qualitative in nature, but you know, you could see that there was a disconnection between the fan base and the sport itself, and you know, particularly people within the sport, the kind of the protagonists within the sport. So if you look at sort of a sport like football and the strong relationship fans have with the teams and some of the players, that just kind of didn't really exist in Formula One, and was definitely something we needed to make more out of, to help build those relationships. Kind of emotional connections, I suppose they are. One of the really interesting things I think that stood out for me from that piece of research that we did when we arrived was the notion of F1 being an exclusive sport. And exclusive was a real kind of double-edged sword, I think, in many ways. You know, on the one hand, it can be quite aspirational and it can be regarded as a positive thing because it attracts people living a lifestyle that's desirable. You know, think of the Monaco Grand Prix, for example. On the other hand, it was kind of maybe seen by non-fans or casual fans as something that actually meant F1 wasn't a sport for them. So, you know, some people were interpreting exclusive as a positive and some people were interpreting it as a negative. But that kind of contradiction, you know, within that particular perception around the sport, really showed us that we had to, you know, this was an area we really had to make progress on, to make it more inclusive, to make people feel closer to the sport. That was a real barrier that existed to kind of entry or people becoming more engaged.
How much follow through is there from other forms of motor racing, you know, the beneath Formula One? It always seems Formula One is like people were scared that this prototype European Super League for football would be like, in terms of, is there much sort of grassroots fandom for this sort of thing, or is it almost a separate beast, Formula One?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess the answer is a little bit of both. You do get a lot of people that are only Formula One fans and are not, you know, don't really follow other motorsport series. But I think probably a lot of the really most engaged Formula One fans, the real hardcore fans, are probably also following other motorsport series to some degree, whether that's, you know, one of our feeder series like Formula 2 or Formula 3, or whether that's a sort of regional or national series, you know, that exists wherever they live, there is that element as well. I think what you probably don't have a lot of is kind of people who start watching a smaller series and then go up to Formula One. So I mean, you use football as an example. There is probably not a lot of, you know, I went to my local club's game, you know, a non-league game when I was young, and then that gradually built my interest, and I eventually went to the big Premier League club near, you know, that's nearest me or whatever. It's probably a lot more the other way, but you know, Formula One, people see Formula One on TV, get interested in motorsport, and it might develop to the smaller series as well.
Yeah, it's not really a jumpers for goalposts type of a sport in the way that you see people flocking to the tennis courts during Wimbledon or kicking balls about in the park during the World Cup. It's as you say, it's an exclusive sport, and the whole architecture around it is attractive and bewilderingly complex, but it's not something that sort of it has an obvious pyramid working up from the bottom to the top.
Yeah, I mean, definitely participation is a challenge for us that that other sports are able to approach in a different way. And we've done different things to try and counteract that. I mean, from a participation point of view, actually, this is where something like esports for us takes on a slightly different role maybe to other sports. You know, esports for us is kind of, to some degree, a way that a lot of people, that's the closest they can get to kind of the feel of what it's what it's like to drive an F1 car. You don't experience the G-forces in the same way, I guess, when you're just on the simulator. But you know, that's our esports series, which has run every year since I think 2018, is kind of something that, again, that we do to allow people to feel closer to the sport. So, you know, we have a series every year that's, qualification is open essentially for anyone to try and qualify for it. And if you get through the rounds, there's then a draft where you can get selected by one of the F1 constructors esports teams. But that's the kind of initiative that we've put in place in the last few years to try and, you know, give more people more opportunities to be closer to the sport.
So having identified those challenges on an ongoing basis, I know that you put some initiatives in place to kind of build that an ongoing relationship with the fans and have a forums for them to feedback. I know some of those initiatives have actually won research awards. How have you been tracking fans over time?
In a lot of different ways. I mean, as I kind of touched on at the start, we didn't really have any kind of, existing research in place for us to jump on the back of when we came to the company in 2017. A lot of stuff we started from scratch. So some of the stuff is the standard research toolkit that a lot of companies have. So we created our own brand tracker. We did an audience segmentation off the back of that. On the digital side, you know, there was a big expansion of our digital products, and we've done lots of user research over the years, whether that's on our website, our app, on F1 TV, which is our direct-to-consumer streaming service. I do a lot of work on the engagement with the TV product as well, because we produce the TV coverage through an in-house production team. So we do a lot of work to see how people engage with that and how we can improve the coverage. I guess in terms of sort of ongoing research, the most kind of visible fan-facing thing we have is Fanvoice, which we set up again in, I think, in 2018. And that's basically an online fan community where there are kind of, you know, to some degree, it's a community, there are forums and people can post blogs and we run polls and so fans can share their opinions with each other and we can see what the fans are talking about. But we also use that as a research resource. You know, we can run surveys, whether that is quite general around feedback on the season we are currently having, or whether it's more specific items around one of our digital products, for example, or during COVID, we talked to fans about how they felt about returning to races, you know, once they were allowed to do so. We can cover like a very wide variety of things via that forum as well.
Presumably, from a TV coverage point of view, it's a challenging sport because I'm not saying it's easy to cover football, but when Sky launched on digital all those years ago, they innovated with things like player cams and you could stand at the home end and watch, and none of them really took off because at the end of the day people wanted the director to decide where to go and what to do. And I guess with the core of the F1 coverage, decisions that are taken about whether, for example, people want to see the leaders staying in the lead or whether there's more interesting stuff going on in terms of a battle for fourth or fifth. I mean, do you do any, that's integral seeing some work you've done using sort of biometrics and things like that, where you actually monitored people's reactions during the race to see how the TV coverage was doing?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, we have an ongoing project, which is it's a galvanic skin response project. So people, we have a panel of people that when they watch the races, they will strap a kind of sensor to the palm of their hand and it basically measures their excitement. It measures how much they sweat, essentially, during the race as a measure of their excitement. I mean, it's a fascinating project as well. You're absolutely right that you can't cover everything around an F1 track at the same time. I mean, one of the really interesting things about the project is you can look at what people tell you through surveys or through focus groups, and then you can kind of test it against their real life reactions when they're watching a race. I think one of the really interesting things we've looked at through the project is how we cover sort of front runners, because they're, you know, sometimes there'll be more than one battle for position going on at the same time. So how we choose which battles we're going to cover is always a difficult one. In, you know, a few years ago when, you know, Lewis Hamilton was very dominant at the front of the field, we had a lot of feedback from viewers that said they wanted more coverage of the midfield. The front wasn't as interesting as it should be. They wanted to see the midfield more, where it was more competitive. But actually you could still kind of see through their galvanic skin response measurements that if you spent a long time covering just the midfield, they actually did get a bit disengaged with it after a while. They did still want to be kind of kept in touch with the front of the field, just to kind of make sure that that there was nothing that they were missing, basically. I suppose it was a sense of FOMO developing to some degree. But generally as well, you know, F1 is quite a complex sport. There's a lot of data being fed to you the whole time during the race, a lot of on-screen graphics, a lot of timing data. And having a project like that that gives us sort of very granular second-by-second engagement data really helps the production team to understand you know, when I put up this graphic, is it having an effect on the viewer's understanding and engagement? Is that effect positive or negative? And we can kind of go back and review all of these things after the races and just make small improvements to the coverage the whole time.
Mm. You mentioned that you sort of centralize the actual coverage itself yourselves, which I know, you know, for example, it's something that some other sports do to assume that consistency of quality. In terms of the rights and the deals that you do around the world to actually license that coverage out to broadcasters and platforms, is there a view on balancing the revenue versus the exposure of the sport? I know that we've got a paper at the event you're talking at, the ASI conference, about the EU, EBU did some research about the benefits of at least an element of the sport being on free to air. And I know you've obviously Channel 4 has been a vehicle, if you forgive the pun, for Formula One. Is that a consideration in terms of the long-term health of the sport?
Well, it's definitely a consideration, yes. I don't think there's necessarily a one-size-fits-all view on this. I mean, I guess broadly you could put kind of the types of coverage into three buckets. There is free-to-air coverage, there is pay TV coverage, and then there's kind of direct-to-consumer streaming. We have our own streaming product called F1 TV, but in terms of the live coverage of races, it's only available in certain markets because essentially depends on the kind of existing broadcast deals that we have in those markets, whether we're allowed to sort of offer the streaming product as well. I guess broadly, we are pretty keen that there is always some element of free-to-air coverage, if possible. But you have to, as you said, it's always a calculation of, you know, what revenue are you going to get from a broadcast contract, whether that's a pay TV contract and or a free-to-air contract. If you have a pay TV broadcaster, obviously that broadcaster has some sort of say on how much free-to-air coverage they may allow another broadcaster to have. And I think the other kind of big consideration is often how established a sport you are in that market. I think there's a very kind of broad rule. If you are kind of developing as a sport in that market and you don't have an established fan base, we probably often then keen to have free-to-air coverage so that we can reach as many people as possible. Hopefully over time that brings you to a stronger position in terms of your fan base, where you may then look to be more to have more pay TV coverage. But it's very difficult to say there's one rule, one size fits all here. It's you know, every market has slightly different circumstances, and you have to react to those circumstances as well.
Mm. Now at the conference, you're going to be talking about the impact that your Netflix series, the hit series Drive to Survive, has, in which you follow a particular Formula One team behind the scenes so people can build a relationship and understanding. So, slightly similar to the documentaries that are sometimes done about the larger football clubs that have been on Amazon. I don't want to preempt that paper. But I'd be interested to know, just as by way of context, how are global ratings to the sport faring over the last few years? What are the big markets in terms of actual viewers around the world? How does the F1 fan base spread, as it were?
I mean, in terms of how the fan base is spread, I think we obviously have established markets in Europe that contribute a lot of viewing, so there'd be kind of no surprises here, but markets like the UK, Italy, Germany, France are kind of among our most popular markets. Brazil is historically a very big market, big kind of F1 tradition, number of very sort of famous drivers coming from Brazil. So we've got a very established fan base there. And then beyond that, I mean, we have kind of target markets that we obviously want to grow. A market like the US has certainly been growing quite a lot in the last few years for us, and it is actually one of our biggest markets. I think in terms of reach, I think in the last sort of pre-COVID season we had, I think it was our fourth biggest market globally in terms of reach. So probably bigger than people would expect, but because it's such a large market, there's still a lot of room to grow. And China, similarly, in terms of the reach we have in China, is a very big market. I think China was our second biggest market in sort of pre-COVID, and it but again, there's still work we can do in terms of engaging the fan base more than they are, and growing it even more because it's such a big market. In terms of how global ratings are doing, I mean, I think generally it's very positive. It's again something that it's difficult to give kind of a one size fits all answer to, because different markets have different contexts, and things like whether a driver from a particular country leaves the sport will affect ratings in a particular market. But I mean, generally, I think we're very pleased with the direction we're going. The majority of markets globally show growth. I think we've done, relating it to drivers, we've been able to do some really good work with in certain markets on the back of those drivers being in the sport and successful. So in the Netherlands, Max Verstappen has helped us really grow the fan base. And I think we're very pleased in the direction that places like the US and China are going, particularly the US, where I think our average audience per Grand Prix has grown by more than 40% over the last sort of 3 years. So it's generally going in the right direction, we feel.
I always thought there should be big potential for Formula One in the States, given that IndyCar just seems to be driving around in a circle for a couple of hours, as far as I can work it out. But there's always that resistance in the US to sports that weren't actually invented in the US. So I guess you might end up with a similar relationship between soccer and American football, if you see what I mean. But
Yeah, I mean, there are sort of challenges in the US, and sports like IndyCar and NASCAR have their own kind of established fan bases, and that can be difficult, I guess, to kind of persuade those fan bases why F1 is different and gives them something that maybe they won't get from their what they're already watching. And you also get challenges like time zones with F1, where when we're in our European season, these are kind of races that are starting at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning in the US, which is obviously not peak viewing time. So there are challenges like that to get around. We obviously then try to make it, a big deal out of our races in the Americas when the start times are much more convenient for that audience.
Well, we look forward to catching up with you at the event itself. As I said, we'll put a link to the tickets in the show notes, or listeners can go to our website at www.asiconferences.com. A blatant plug there. But in the meantime, until we see you in a couple of weeks, thanks for taking part, Greg.
No problem. Thank you very much. Looking forward to the conference.